Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, May 20th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, South Fork girls softball team makes history. The Arcata Planning Commission votes on the Gateway Area Plan. And drag queens strut in Hopland. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Multiple incidents have broken out over the weekend involving burn piles, and CAL FIRE says the recent calls they've responded to could have been avoided.
Yes, this is Jeremy Ward, Battalion Chief with the CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit Fire Prevention Bureau. So, yes, Lauren, over the last couple days, we have had, actually dating back into last week, we've had an increase in activity. And a lot of this activity has been related to people doing their landscape debris burning. And at least one of these instances, involved landowners who were burning without permit. And that has created a couple of issues. In the incident that we had last week, it resulted in us having to dispatch multiple fire resources to go determine what the source of this smoke was coming from. That was determined to be a landowner, again, who was burning without permit and didn't make any proper notifications. That fire was still under control. But yesterday we had a similar incident. Another landowner burning, no permit. And in that case, that fire did escape control and required CAL FIRE resources to come in and contain that fire. That fire is now contained and is in a patrol status.
Another similar incident occurred this Monday afternoon on Highway 36.
We did dispatch equipment out somewhere, I believe, in the Bridgeville area to another possible escaped debris burn. So with all that, we do want to remind the public that there are rules and that we expect people to go out and get these permits. And when folks burn safely and responsibly and by following the rules, obtaining their permits, and making proper notifications, then we can allow that burning season to go on longer, which benefits everyone. But we just need people to work with us and do it safely. Again, our burn permits, they're available online. They don't cost anything. We just want people to get those permits so that they understand the safety requirements that they need to be doing, and again, to make those notifications so that we're not sending equipment where it doesn't need to go.
In closing, Battalion Chief Jeremy Ward stated that it's frustrating for CAL FIRE to respond to these incidents that could have been avoided if individuals had followed the terms and conditions of their permits.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. This seems to be a recurring theme year after year, and I know you and I talk about it multiple times a year, every year. You know, we put out news releases, we reach out to social media, we try and get the information out there, and yet we still have, a few folks who don't follow the rules and end up with these escaped fires, which again are easily preventable. We've talked about it before, but the common causes that we generally see result in escaped debris burns are not burning with a responsible adult being present at all times at the fire. Not having any type of clearance around their piles, and then the folks who burn when it's windy, which, you know, all those are violations of the terms of a permit. So, you know, we ask again and again and again for people to follow those rules, and the folks that do follow the rules, well, those are the ones who typically don't result in escaped fires. For those folks who can't follow the rules or, you know, end up with these escapes that are preventable, there are potential consequences. You know, we could have an officer who comes out and possibly issues the landowner citation. You know, we could be referring these to the district attorney's office. There's also potential civil penalties for cost of suppression, potentially revoking any burn permits that they have, or referring to air quality, who could also impose fines. So, again, you know, please work with us. Make it safe for everyone, make it safe for your neighbors, make it safe for you, and for the firefighters, so that we're not having to dispatch these responders out to these incidents, which again are preventable.
You can obtain a free CAL FIRE burn permit online and learn helpful tips at fire.ca.gov. The South Fork girls softball team is making history. After winning the North Coast Section Championship on Friday with a score of 12-1, they now advance to the state playoffs, a first in Lady Cub history. For more on this groundbreaking moment, we spoke with key players and their coach.
I'm Chloe McConnell, South Fork Cubs pitcher.
And I'm Mackenzie Brewer, South Fork Cubs first base.
I'm Lisa Todd, and I'm the coach.
They explained that their championship victory was the result of hard work, following a rocky start to the season.
It was a little rough at the beginning. We didn't win that much, but then we worked hard at practice, and we won.
For the last 2 years, the South Fork Lady Cubs were without a coach and unable to play.
I had retired 2 years prior, and so I came back out of retirement so they could have a season.
The dedication of Coach Todd for her players has paid off, leading the Lady Cubs to the NCS Championship, and now the state playoffs.
It was great. I mean, they worked hard. I mean, we definitely were behind when the season began, and they worked hard, and to come this far after seeing how the season started, it's been great.
The pitcher and the first baseman agree.
We were definitely behind considering we didn't have a team last year, so just going over the basics of hitting and fielding, it was all challenging, but we all put our work together.
Yeah. And most of the team, they were freshmen last year, so they had never played, so now we're sophomores.
Yeah.
So over half the team hasn't played high school before, so it was definitely different.
Yeah.
But we worked hard.
Definitely takes a team to win.
Yeah.
It's taken them a long way to work together as a team.
Yeah.
Although it isn't without challenges, they say living in a rural community has its advantages.
It's a little bit challenging to find girls that are motivated to play because South Fork's definitely short on the girls' sports program. It definitely has advantages. We have a really good parenting.
Yeah.
Everybody comes together.
And everyone's friends, like close with each other.
Yeah.
As for their favorite part of the game.
I just love it. Like, I've always loved it. It's been my favorite sport since I've started playing.
I think it's their coach.
And Lisa.
Definitely the coach.
Definitely Lisa.
Yeah.
After winning 12-1 on Friday evening, marking their North Coast Section Championship, they were notified that they would be making history.
After the game, I thought that was going to be our final game, and then figured out we're going to state, which is super awesome.
And South Fork softball's never gone that far, or won this
crazy
many division championships. Yeah. This is their third one.
The state playoff bracket will be announced this weekend, and the game will be played next week, with the possibility of a home game at the South Fork field.
If we win, I think it's then the following Thursday, and then the finals will be, I think, that Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited, but it's going to be a lot of work in the next week for sure.
Hitting off faster, pitching, I think we're going to, because we could face a D3 school, and we're D6, so we're going to probably face a lot faster pitching, harder hitting, so we got to tighten up defense, we got to get our timing on our swings down, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
With a national perspective becoming more inclusive of women's sports, they hope that the community comes out to support.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Also with South Fork sports, it's so rewarding now that we're going to state. And
yeah, it's nice to be able to do something that the boys aren't.
And they made history. I mean, no South Fork softball team's gone this far.
Come support us.
Yeah.
They've worked really hard to get this far.
Yep.
They're a great group. They've worked hard to get this far, and I just hope everyone comes and supports them and cheers them on. Win or lose, we're going to give it our best shot. Wish us the best of luck.
Yep.
They're going to be facing some tough competition.
We will continue to share updates on the upcoming state playoff game. KMA News wishes the Lady Cubs the best of luck. The Arcata Planning Commission voted on the Gateway Area Plan. KMUD's Ryan Christensen reports.
On Tuesday, May 14th, the Arcata Planning Commission approved the final draft of the Gateway Area Plan. The Gateway Area Plan would rezone the west side of Arcata surrounding the Creamery building into several tiered zones, with varying levels of both housing and mixed-use development, with some zones allowing up to 8-story buildings. There were 2 resolutions on the docket, the EIR, or Environmental Impact Report, and the second, an update to the 2045 General Plan, as explained by Arcata Community Development Director David Loya.
This is a big milestone. This is a major milestone in this process. We've been working on the general plan for, Gateway Code for, 7, close to 8 years now. And so I just want to describe a little bit about what the action looks like and what the process looks like. So to start with, the Planning Commission is integral to this action. This is what is referred to as a legislative action. We're changing the laws in the city of Arcata, updating the general plan and some zoning ordinances. And so the Planning Commission recommendation is a required step. As I mentioned, this required step was duly noticed. And there are 2 actions for your consideration tonight. One is to make a recommendation to the City Council that they adopt or certify the CEQA documents. And then the second is that they recommend adoption of the documents themselves, the general plan amendments, the Gateway Code amendment that we've been looking at for several years.
Director Loya proceeded to go through the findings of the EIR, including the findings that there would be some impact to a couple of historic buildings, as well as the air quality of the now-named Gateway area. But such findings were addressed by the city's drafting of a statement of overriding considerations, as explained again by David Loya.
Basically, what a statement of overriding considerations allows you to do is to say, even though there's this unmitigated impact, the social benefit that we garner from approving the project outweighs the environmental impact, and so we're going to go ahead and make findings to do that.
The meeting was again opened to public comment. A few of Fred Wise's Arcata1.com's acolytes expressed their views and concerns, as they have at every step of the way in the approval process. One of the issues brought up was a letter drafted by Arcata's Fire District regarding concerns they had with the buildings being of a greater height than the fire district is currently equipped to deal with. The findings were addressed again by David Loya.
There are some code changes that, to my knowledge, we have recommended the fire district staff have agreed to. The recommendation was of our building official was to, as we had discussed sort of conceptually early on, was to take some of the fire provisions that are identified for higher density, larger buildings and adopt them into more mid-rise style buildings. And so, for example, when you get above a certain threshold, the width of the stairwells needs to be wider to accommodate a larger, evacuation pathway. And so that was one of the recommendations, was to make the stairwells larger. I don't remember off the top of my head the other provisions, but there were provisions like that where we're pulling down from taller buildings into smaller buildings, these provisions that, are safer for and better for, for fire access. The fire marshal and the fire chief agreed that these were good provisions that they felt like went a long way to addressing their concerns.
Another issue often brought up by the small number of opponents to the Gateway Plan is that the city is moving too fast with the zoning changes and not allowing the public to have input into the process. Those issues were addressed by Planning Commissioner Peter Lehman.
I do want to say just personally that this process has been a lot of different things over a very long time. Myself personally, I've been working and volunteering on this for nearly 5 years. We have had, as a city, more than 100 meetings about this project, many, many hundreds of hours of discussion, public input, joint study sessions, Planning Commission, City Council. So whatever else people may think about how this process has evolved, it has certainly not been rushed or a quick process. I can personally attest to that.
The action was approved with a 5-1 vote, with Commissioner Abigail Strickland dissenting and Commissioner Daniel Tagney absent. The City Council will consider final approval of the Gateway Area Plan at July 17th's public meeting. Reporting from Arcata, this is Ryan Christensen for KMUD News.
Turning to Mendocino, drag queens strut in Hopland. KZYX's Sarah Reith reports.
The disco ball was spinning at the Hopland Tap on Saturday night as drag queens sparkled and strutted. They were capping off the second annual Mendo Pride in Hopland, and the bar was packed with locals as well as visitors from all over the state. Terracotta Clay is a drag queen from Willits. She was the only performer last year, but this time around she got to snap her fan at some colleagues. She described her look in the beer garden before the show got underway.
I love colors. I love neutral colors, and terracotta is a really like brownish, like red and like a reddish brown, and it's like really gorgeous, like the terracotta army, that kind of color, like pottery. But it also, like, I want my drag to be like, I want to morph myself into like this, I want like this entity that I see in myself, and it's like, oh, like this is like clay, like a sculpture. I want to be like a masterpiece. So I'm gonna, and that is how I got the name Terracotta Clay. I want to be look like a masterpiece, mold myself and shape myself to however I want. But also, and the look I'm going for, it's kind of like very revealing. It's like I'm wearing like a nude bodysuit, has like some black hands, like red nails, like going all across my body. But I'm wearing a like a sheer, like a feathery, like boudoir, like robe, kind of like a reveal moment. So, like, during my performance, I can like put a reveal and show off my figure and all that stuff.
And a lot of rhinestones, so you are definitely sparkly.
Oh yeah, and I kind of want to be in the star, kind of be like the star of the show. And it's like, it kind of remind me, I'm like, I want to shine brighter.
Manny Santos, also known as Mr. SF Bear 2024, came up from the Bay Area to MC the event, which he did with the requisite lightly lewd wit and live singing. He's also something of an educational ambassador for gay culture.
You know, you have your classifications as twink, you know, you have the otters, you have you know, like the daddies and all that. And one of the categories is bears. Something that I think is very interesting about the bear community is that they're very cuddly, nurturing. They tend to be very accepting of just everybody. Most people will find that any events that are geared towards bears, anybody's pretty much welcome. And that is why I really felt like running for Mr. Bear was something that I could definitely support, was because I'm like that. I have that need to just include everybody. You know, it's that warmthness. I'm like, it definitely invites other people to be part of the community. And it's, I enjoy it. And I'm very thankful that I won the contest and I'm able to represent.
Santos reigned with Vicky Sparkles, whose full drag name we can't say on the air, as Duke and Duchess of the Alameda and Contra Costa County Grand Ducal Council, raising money for various charities during the pandemic. And with drag enjoying a cultural moment, she's ready to meet a voracious new demand for big, sparkly gowns.
My look, it was inspired by the Bear Pride flag. I made it. I just got out of fashion school. I just graduated. So this was one of my final projects, and it's premiering tonight. So it's took me a long time, and I'm very proud of it. And it's a big, long ball gown that is brown, yellow, gold, and orange.
Can you talk about some of your history with doing drag and coming up here and where you came from?
I am 7 years sober. I got my start doing drag at Mascara. It's a sober drag group in San Francisco. And it's sponsored by the Castro Country Club.
Can you talk a little bit more about going to fashion school? Where was that, and what was your focus?
So my focus was pretty much on drag costumes, but it was a small program in College of Alameda. My outfits that I like, and because I'm a bigger girl, you can't really find ready-to-wear clothes, ready-to-wear costumes. So you have to like alter them or have somebody special make them.
So you can be the one who custom makes the costumes for your colleagues.
Yes, that's what I want to do. I want to get my own business, team up with one of my classmates. We already talked about it, and do custom orders, costumes for pretty much anybody.
The Duke and Duchess Emeritus ran through a dizzying array of numbers, including a duet of the scene from the animated film Beauty and the Beast, where Gaston proposes to Belle. That's not the one where Santos wore a t-shirt that read, "I made your dad a bottom," or the one where he vamped in a huge green silk bathrobe. The surprise number of the night was Catalina St. James, a trans woman from Merced who just happened to stop by in a tight red dress with matching lipstick and platinum blonde hair. By the time she got to her second number, screaming fans were practically begging her to take their money.
So were you planning to dance tonight?
Actually, I wasn't. So we actually came here to Ukiah for an HIV conference just to start talking about rural communities dealing with HIV epidemics, and then turning around and we saw, hey, what to do? And we saw this and we were like, let's go do it. And so we came over here, and as soon as we walk in, they go, do you perform? And I was like, yes, let's go for it.
So you just walk around at all times ready to do a drag performance?
No, no, God, no. Don't ask me to perform at 6 o'clock in the morning. I barely have eyebrows on. But, you know, I think when you go out, just always, you know, take pride in your appearance. And not saying that, you know, other individuals don't, but I always like to just make a show. You know, why not? Why not throw some glitter and some, you know, gold rhinestones, whatever, and just have a good time? I live as a trans woman, and so my mother, growing up as a trans woman, my mother was always, if you're going to be a woman, you're going to be the best-looking woman in the room, right? Regardless if you're visibly trans or you're passable, you're going to always take pride in your appearance. But on top of that, why not walk into a place and make it just be stunning? Why not have a good time?
For KZYX News, I'm Sarah Wright. For all our local news, with photos and more, visit kzyx.org.
Redwood Community Radio, Queer Humboldt, Vibe Queer Bar, and the Mateel Community Center are joining together to throw this year's Southern Humboldt Pride on June 22nd. KMUD News will bring you more details on this all-ages celebration in the coming weeks. KMUD's Matt LaFever brings the latest headlines from Mendocino County, where a missing man was found dead at the bottom of a coastal cliff. A jury found a DUI driver guilty, and a study seeks to understand the impact of decommissioning.
This is Matt LaFever with the headlines out of Mendocino County for Monday, May 20th, 2024. Let's begin with some somber news that came out of Mendocino County this weekend. Authorities were called to Jug Handle State Park south of Fort Bragg last Friday after reports of a missing person in the area. On the morning of Friday, May 17, 2024, the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office responded to assist California State Park officers in the search for Gregory Noyes of Point Arena, California. Noyes had been reported missing to the Marin County Sheriff's Office 2 days earlier on May 15th. He had last been heard from on May 12th when he mentioned he was traveling to Marin County. Park personnel discovered Noyes' vehicle in the parking lot of Jug Handle State Park, where it had been for several days. Upon initiating a search of the park, deputies found a large brimmed hat resting on the cliff edge, where the park meets the Pacific Ocean. Tragically, they then located the body of a white male approximately 50 feet below the cliff on the rocky shore. Deputies, along with state park officers, descended the cliff to the site where they confirmed the body was Gregory Noyes, identified through his driver's license and photographs. It appears Noyes sustained severe injuries from the fall. The Mendocino County Sheriff's Office has contacted Noyes' next of kin to inform them of the discovery. During the coroner's investigation, it was determined that the fall might have been accidental. No evidence of foul play has been found at this time. Authorities are now seeking any information related to the incident. If you have any details that might aid in the investigation, please contact the Sheriff's Office Dispatch Center at 707-463-4086. Information can also be provided anonymously via the non-emergency tip line at 707-234-2100. And now to the Mendocino County Superior Court, where a jury has returned a guilty verdict in a recent DUI case. Last Wednesday, May 15th, a Mendocino County Superior Court jury found 39-year-old Aaron Vaughn Mathewson of Healdsburg guilty of driving under the influence of alcohol and driving with a blood alcohol level of 0.08 or greater, both misdemeanors. The incident occurred just before 2 a.m. on October 1st of 2023 near the fairgrounds in Ukiah. Mathewson's vehicle was seen drifting between lanes, prompting law enforcement to conduct a stop. Mathewson subsequently failed field sobriety tests, and breath tests revealed his blood alcohol level to be 0.14 and 0.13. The evidence was gathered by the Ukiah Police Department in the California Department of Justice Forensic Crime Laboratory. The prosecution's case was presented by Deputy District Attorney Joshua Hopps. The criminal trial was overseen by Mendocino County Superior Court Judge Keith Falder and spanned parts of three consecutive days. And now to the contentious Potter Valley Project. The Lake County Board of Supervisors has reaffirmed its commitment to keeping Scott Dam in place, saving Lake Pillsbury, and emphasizing its importance for regional water security. In a press release, the Lake County Board of Supervisors held steadfast in prioritizing the retention of Scott Dam, highlighting the significance of Lake Pillsbury. With over 500,000 Californians, including many in Mendocino County, relying on water releases from Lake Pillsbury and the Potter Valley Project for drinking and agricultural needs, maintaining an adequate water supply is crucial for the region's daily life. Efforts to demonstrate Lake Pillsbury's regional value are being bolstered by gathering more data. If Pacific Gas and Electric Company gains approval from the Federal Energy Regulation Commission to remove Scott Dam, it is essential to understand the potential impacts of such a profound change, the Lake County Board of Supervisors argued. The California Department of Water Resources has committed $700,000 from the Water Shortage Management Program to the, quote, Lake County Resource Assessment Impact Analysis and Adaptation Strategy Evaluation Project, unquote. The project will analyze the potential effects of PG&E's proposed decommissioning of Scott Dam on various aspects of the region, including recreation, wildlife suppression, the ecosystem, power, sediment, water supply, and infrastructure. The outcomes of the project are expected to be highly relevant for Mendocino County as well. The technical analysis will include hydrological, hydraulic, and sediment modeling of the Upper Eel River and Lake Pillsbury, recreational impact analysis, GIS and bathymetry data analysis, and economic modeling. This project represents a significant opportunity to influence the future of both Lake and Mendocino counties, as well as broader California. And that's the latest from Mendocino County. I'm Matt LaFever in Hopland, reporting for KMUD News.
In state news, conservation groups praise new rules governing oil and gas on public lands. Suzanne Potter reports.
Groups that fight for public lands and national parks are praising two recent Biden administration rules for managing federal land. The oil and gas rule instructs the Bureau of Land Management to minimize impacts from extractive uses like mining and drilling for oil and gas. Matthew Kirby with the National Parks Conservation Association says the oil and gas industry has had too much influence in the past.
Under the previous administration, we saw oil and gas leases offered right up to the boundary of national parks, which doesn't make sense in a rational leasing system. And so these type of rules ensure that that won't happen again.
The Independent Petroleum Association of America has said the new rule makes the regulatory environment hostile to extractive uses and will hurt local tax revenues. The oil and gas rule also increases royalty and rental rates and updates leasing terms and bonding rules that require companies to foot the bill for cleanup and restoration. The public lands rule puts conservation on an equal footing with extractive uses and recreation. Kirby notes that smog now pollutes the air in some of California's most famous national parks.
And Sequoia and Kings Canyon, which is not far from the sprawling oil fields of Bakersfield, ranked as the single worst air quality of any parks in the country. Yosemite, just a little bit further north, wasn't far behind at number 4 in terms of worst air quality.
In California, the BLM owns 15 million acres of land, and about 78,000 acres are currently producing oil and gas. The agency controls 245 million acres of land across the United States, and 90% are open to extractive uses. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Ryan Christensen, Matt LaFever, Sarah Rice, and Suzanne Potter. Reporting from Redwood Community Radio, I'm Lauren Schmidt.